Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharane Navasesha Sunyavari Pashkati Desitarane Vanshikopatrubhyascha Kripasindubhayevacha Kitanam Pavinevyo Vaishnavyo Namo Namo. Harinikashipu, livid with rage because the Lord had killed his brother, Hiranyaksha. It's the nature of demonic people. Why did the Lord kill Hiranyaksha? Because Hiranyaksha challenged him. Challenged him to fight. He was defeating everyone in the universe, and then he went to Varuna and challenged Varuna to fight. And Varunadev said, "I'm too old to fight, I've retired. But if you want a real fight, someone who can defeat you, you fight with Lord Vishnu." "Oh, where is Lord Vishnu?" So he went searching all over the universe, and then he challenged, criticized, blasphemed the Lord when he saw him as Varahadev. And then the fight took place. But yet, Hiranyakashipu is thinking, "My poor brother, why has Vishnu killed him? Innocent fellow as he was." Everyone always thinks like that. So Hiranyakashipu called all his followers together, all of a similar mentality. And then he made a plan, and he incorporated them into his plan. How to kill Vishnu, how to kill the demigods, how to destroy the Vedic culture based on the service, sacrifice, ultimately meant to please Lord Vishnu. So by destroying the culture, the demigods, Vishnu, they would die. That was his thought. So text 11. The basic principle of Brahminical culture, Vishnu Dvija Kriya Mulo, the basic principle, the root principle of Brahminical culture, is to satisfy Lord Vishnu, the personification of sacrificial and ritualistic ceremonies. Lord Vishnu is the personified reservoir of all religious principles. He is the shelter of all the demigods, the great pitas, and the people in general. When the Brahmins are killed, no one will exist to encourage the Kshatriyas to perform Jagya sacrifice, and thus the demigods, not being appeased by Jagya, will automatically die. Purport. Since Vishnu is the central point of Brahminical culture, Hiranyakashipu's plan was to kill Vishnu. For if Vishnu were killed, naturally, the Brahminical culture would also be lost. With Brahminical culture laws, Jagya would no longer be performed. For want of Jagya, the regular distribution of rainfall would cease. Jagyad bhavati parjanya. Thus, there would be disturbances all over the world. And naturally, the demigods would be defeated. From this verse, we get a clear indication of how human society is disturbed when the Vedic Aryan civilization is killed and the Vedic ritualistic ceremonies performed by the Brahmanas are stopped. Kalo Sudra Sambhava. Because the population of the modern world consists mostly of Sudras, the Brahminical culture is now lost and is extremely difficult to re-establish in a proper way. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya has recommended the chanting of the holy name of the Lord, which will revive Brahminical culture very easily. Harirnama, 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 Iba Kebalam, Kaloa Nasteva, 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 Gatia, Aniyata. Because of the increment in demoniac population, people have lost Brahminical culture. Nor is there a Kshatriya government. Instead, the government is a democracy in which any Sudra can be voted into taking up the governmental reins and capture the power to rule. Because of the poisonous effects of Kali Yuga, the Shastra 12:2, Bhagavatam 12th canto, 2nd chapter, 13th verse, says, Dasyu Prayeshu Rajasu. The government will adopt the policies of Dasyus, or plunderers. Basically, that means their only business is to increase the taxes and take away the wealth and riches of the citizens. Thus there will be no instructions from the brahmanas. And if there are brahminical instructions, there will be no kshatriya rulers who can follow them. Aside from Satyayuga, even formerly, in the days when demons were flourishing, Hiranyakashipu planned to destroy the brahminical culture and the kshatriya government, and thus create chaos all over the world. Although in Satyayuga this plan was very difficult to execute, in Kali Yuga, which is full of sudras and demons, the brahminical culture is lost and can be revived only by the chanting of the Mahamantra. Therefore, the Krishna consciousness movement, or the Hare Krishna movement, has been inaugurated to revive brahminical culture very easily, so that people may become happy and peaceful in this life and prepare for elevation in the next. In this regard, Srila Madhvacharya quotes this verse from the Brahmanda Purana, Vipra yagyari mulam tu harer ityasuram matam harire vahisavasya mulam samyad matonripa. O King, the demons think that Hari, Lord Vishnu, exists because of the brahmanas and jagyas. But factually, Hari is the cause of everything, including the brahmins and jagyas. Therefore, through the popularizing of Hari Kirtan, or the Sankirtan movement, the brahminical culture and Kshatriya government will automatically come back and people will be extremely happy. So this was Hiranyakashipu's plan to destroy culture, and thereby his attempt was to destroy the object of culture. And what is the ultimate object of culture? Not sense enjoyment, not economic development, but the ultimate object of culture is to elevate everyone so that they please Krishna. So the pleasure of the Lord is the purpose of culture. And culture, if you're culturing something, it means something is going to come out. There's an environment that's created. So something comes out. So the culture is an environment in which advancement in spiritual life comes out, and the pleasure of the Lord is the goal. So the recommendation in this age, when the culture has all but been destroyed, religious culture is finished, moral culture is finished, ethical culture is finished, the taxes always increasing, and the no one has any trust in the leadership and the governmental leaders. They turn out to be plunderers and thieves again and again and again, always voting themselves higher wages. When culture is gone and selfishness exists, the recommended remedy is the spreading of the Sankirtan movement, the chanting of the Hare Krishna Mahamantra congregationally. So Hiranyakashipu, quite the horrible person, demonic person, and not at all shy about it either, told his followers to exhibit this plan. Immediately go wherever there is good protection for the cows and brahmanas, and wherever the Vedas are studied in terms of the Vanashrama principles. Set fire to those places and cut from the roots the trees there, which are the source of life. Trees, quite environmental. Prabhupada explains in the purport. Another point is that trees, this is the second paragraph, I believe. Yeah. Another point is that trees also should be given protection. During its lifetime, a tree should not be cut for industrial enterprises. everything exploited in Kali Yuga. In Kali Yuga, trees are indiscriminately, unnecessarily cut for industry, in particular for paper mills that manufacture a profuse quantity of paper for the publication of demoniac propaganda, nonsensical literature, huge quantities of newspapers, and many other paper products. This is a sign of demoniac civilization. The cutting of trees is prohibited unless necessary for the service of Lord Vishnu. Yagyartat kamano nyatra loko yam kama bandana. Work done as a sacrifice for Lord Vishnu must be performed. Otherwise, work binds one to this material world. But if the paper mills stop producing paper, one may argue, how can our ISKCON literature be published? The answer is that the paper mills should manufacture paper only for the publication of ISKCON literature, because ISKCON literature is published for the service of Lord Vishnu. This literature clarifies our relationship with Lord Vishnu, and therefore the publication of ISKCON literature is the performance of jagya. Yagya tat kamano nyatra loko yam kama bandana. Yagya must be performed as indicated by the superior authorities. That's the most superior authority is Krishna, and those are his words. That unless we perform sacrifice for the pleasure, unless we act for the pleasure of the Lord, the work that we do will bind us to the material world. It will create karma. So therefore the only work that doesn't bind us, that doesn't create karma for us, is work that is offered and meant for the pleasure of the Lord. So, the conclusion. The cutting of trees simply to manufacture paper for the publication of unwanted literature is the greatest sinful act. Killing, more killing. Killing trees, killing animals, killing people, killing babies. Killing, 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 killing. And the result is a chaotic civilization where everyone's miserable, the environment is polluted, the mountains are ripped apart, the water is polluted, the old forest growths are destroyed, useless pine trees are there only, everything ruined. So this was Hiranyakashipu's plan to ruin everything, ruin culture. Thus the demons, being fond of disastrous activities, kill the animals, go hunting. Why? It's fun. I like to kill. Thus the demons, being fond of disastrous activities, took Hiranyakashipu's instructions on their head with great respect and offered him obeisances. According to his directions, they engaged in envious activities directed against all living beings. The demons set fire to the cities, villages, pasturing grounds, cow pens, gardens, agricultural fields, and natural forests. They burned the hermitages of the saintly persons, the important mines that produce valuable metals, the residential quarters of the agriculturalists, the mountain villages, and the villages of the cow protectors, the cowherd men. They also burn the government capitals. Everything, all these things are ultimately meant for the Lord's service. And everything was destroyed. Some of the demons took digging instruments and broke down the bridges, the protective walls, and the gates, the gopuras of the cities. Some took axes and began cutting the important trees that produced mango, jackfruit, and other sources of food. Some of the demons took firebrands and set fire to the residential quarters of the citizens. So terror, reign of terror. Prabhupada's short purport. The cutting of trees is generally prohibited. In particular, trees that produce nice fruit for the maintenance of human society should not be cut. In different countries, there are different types of fruit trees. In India, the mango and jackfruit are prominent. In other places, there are mango trees, jackfruit trees, coconut trees, and berry trees, and apple trees, and pear trees, and all kinds of fruit trees. Any tree that produces nice fruit for the maintenance of the people should not be cut at all. This is a Shastric injunction. thus disturbed again and again by the unnatural occurrences caused by the followers of Hiranyakashipu, all the people had to cease the activities of Vedic culture. Not receiving the results of jagya, sacrifice, the demigods also became disturbed. They left their residential quarters in the heavenly planets and, unobserved by the demons, began wandering on the planet Earth to see the disasters. After performing the ritualistic observances for the death of his brother, Hiranyakashipu, being extremely unhappy, tried to pacify his nephews. So he set his plan in motion, which was a plan of destruction simply to destroy, to rip down, to break, to kill, set fire to, cut. And then he performed the, feeling a little bit better, having done something productive, he performed the death ceremony of his brother, and that brought up the wound in his heart again. He was extremely unhappy, and while surrounded by his relatives, his nephews, he began to speak to them. Now he's going to speak philosophy. O King, Hiranyakashipu was extremely angry. But since he was a great politician, what does it mean to be a politician? It means to be thinking one thing, but be speaking another. The art of politics is to do what you want for your own purposes and make it seem as if it's for everyone else's benefit. I'm doing this for you, to help you, but actually that's not at all the motivation. So he was an expert, great politician, and he knew how to act according to the time and situation. He wanted to pacify his relatives. With sweet words, although he was very angry, he pacified his nephews, whose names were Sakuni, Shamba, Drishta, Bhutana, Shantapana, Vrika, Kalanabha, Mahanabha, Harismaru, and Utkacha. He also consoled their mother, his sister-in-law, Rushabhanu, as well as his own mother, Ditti. He spoke to them as follows. He began to preach philosophy to pacify their minds. Hiranyakashipu said, "My dear mother, sister-in-law, and nephews, you should not lament for the death of the great hero. For a hero's death in front of his enemy is glorious and desirable. My dear mother," now he's moving in some philosophy, because if someone dies in battle, fighting for dharma, fixed in the concept that he is not the body, that he's a soul, and fighting in that mood, he will attain a glorious destination, heavenly planets. So after explaining that Hiranyaksha must have attained a great destination due to dying in battle, he begins to speak philosophy. Text 21. "My dear mother, in a restaurant or place for drinking cold water, many travelers are brought together. And after drinking water, they continue to their respective destinations. Similarly, living entities join together in a family, and later, as a result of their own actions, they are led apart to their destinations." True philosophy, but spoke for his own demonic political purposes. There's a story how a man had died, and his relatives were all mourning, and they brought the body to the burning ghat, and there was a jackal there, and it was midday. There was a jackal there, and also there was a vulture, and both vultures and jackals like to eat dead bodies. So both of them began thinking that if they burn this dead body, we're going to starve today. We won't have anything to eat. So we better do something about it. Now the jackal, does anyone know when the jackal eats? Day or night? Nighttime. The jackal eats at night. And when does the vulture eat? The vulture eats in the daytime. So they had conflicting interests. So the vulture immediately began to speak. Philosophy, just like Hiranyakashipu. He said, why are you standing around this dead body crying and lamenting? The soul has already gone. You are lamenting for that which is not worthy of grief. That which you loved has already gone. The body is dead. You should leave this place immediately and stop being so sentimental. Don't you know that the life is the property of the soul, which is eternal? Why are you lamenting? Leave immediately. Because if they left immediately, he'd be able to eat the body. And then the jackal came and said, no, no, no. This is improper. You have lived with him for so long. You should spend time. You should talk about all the affectionate dealings that you had with him. You should speak of the love. You should remember those who we love. That their memory is not in vain. Recount the activities that you performed together. Bring out the sentiment and the love that you truly had for this person. And then when night falls, then it is time for you to go. Because then he'd be able to eat the body. So in this way, different people can speak philosophy, but it will be for their own end. And that doesn't mean very much, actually, even though the philosophy may be true. So Hiranyakashipu, for his own purposes, is speaking philosophy. Prabhupada's purport to that, he's saying that we gather, we come like in a restaurant. We come to a restaurant, we sit for a while together, and then we go our own way. It's true. We come together in a family or a group of people. Then circumstances push one north, another person south, another person east, another person west. One person dies, one person lives to be 150. One person gets sick and has to go to the hospital. One person gets a job somewhere else. This is karma. Bringing us together, pushing us apart. And it is powerful. And it is, we cannot fight it. Prabhupada's purport. Prakriti kriyamanani gunai kamani sarvasha ahankara vamudatma kartaham iti manyate. The bewildered soul, the bewildered spirit soul, under the influence of the three modes of material nature, thinks himself the doer of activities which are in actuality carried out by nature. We're all illusioned by Maya, thinking I'm doing this and I'm doing this and doing this and doing this. But actually we're being forced by material nature to act in this way, the three modes. All living entities act exactly according to the directions of prakriti, material nature. Because in the material world, we are fully under a higher control. All the living entities in this material world have come here only because they wanted to be equal to Krishna in material and Krishna in enjoyment, and have thus been sent here to be conditioned by material nature in different degrees. Conditioned means controlled, limited, limitations placed upon us. In the material world, the so-called family is a combination of several persons in one home to fulfill the terms of their imprisonment. Not very romantic. As criminal prisoners scatter as soon as their terms are over and they are released, all of us who have temporarily assembled as family members will continue to our respective destinations. Another example given is that family members are like straws carried together by the waves of a river. Sometimes such straws mixed together in whirlpools and later dispersed again by the same waves. They float alone in the water. Although Hiranyakashipu was a demon, he had Vedic knowledge and understanding. Thus the advice given to his family members, his sister-in-law, mother, and nephews, was quite sound. The demons are considered highly elevated in knowledge, but because they do not use their good intelligence for the service of the Lord, they are called demons. And on the other hand, if one uses one's good intelligence, or whatever one has that is good, in the service of the Lord, that is, one is called godly. Hiranyakashipu continues with his preaching. The spirit soul, so the family disperses, he's telling the family members, unavoidably by karma, the spirit soul, the living entity, has no death, for he is eternal and inexhaustible. Being free from material contamination, he can go anywhere in the material or spiritual worlds. He is fully aware and completely different from the material body. But because of being misled by misuse of his slight independence, he is obliged to accept subtle and gross bodies created by the material energy, and thus he is subjected to so-called material happiness and distress. Therefore, no one should lament for the passing of the spirit soul from the body. Purport. Hiranyakashipu very intelligently described the position of the soul. The soul is never the body, but is always completely different from the body. And therefore, everyone has a feeling of deathlessness. Everyone thinks that they will not die. It's just natural for the soul. And therefore when we hear, oh, we have this disease or that disease and we have this amount of time to live or we get old, it's so frustrating because that directly contradicts the feeling of eternal life that we have within us. That is the frustration of the soul, that he longs for eternity, eternal relationships, steady positions, eternal happiness, eternal knowledge, but in the temporary, always changing material atmosphere, his frustration knows no end. Being eternal and inexhaustible, the soul has no death. But when the same pure soul desires to enjoy the material world independently means independently of Krishna, he is placed under the conditions of material nature and must therefore accept a certain type of body and suffer the pains and pleasures thereof. This is also described by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, Karanam Gunasangasya Sarasarjuni Janmasu. The living entity is born in different families or species of life because of being infected by the modes of material nature. When conditioned by material nature, the living entity must accept a certain type of body which is offered by nature under the direction of the Supreme Lord. Condition, control. Keep moving, text 23. Because of the movement of the water, Hiranyakashipu says, the trees on the bank of a river, when reflected on the water, seem to move. Similarly, when the eyes move because of some mental derangement, the land appears to move also. So the explanation is that something that doesn't move appears to move. So the soul is fixed in its existence, but he is perceived as if to be moving due to maya or illusion. Just like the trees on the bank of the river, when our glance is focused on the water, the trees seem to be shimmering and moving, but they're not dancing at all. They're not moving. They're not upside down. They're not roots upward, branches down. So we are looking, our consciousness It's glancing at the material energy. It's reflected through the material energy. And therefore we see ourselves in an illusory way, as the body first. It is a mental derangement. This is caused by illusion, Maya. In the same way, O my gentle mother, when the mind is agitated by the movements of the modes of material nature, goodness, passion, ignorance, and the mind is always agitated by these, the living entity, although freed from all the different phases of the subtle and gross bodies, thinks that he has changed from one condition to another. So, Haranyakashipu is saying, don't be foolish, Haranyatsa has already passed. What is there to lament about? The soul has moved on. In his bewildered state, this is 25-26, the living entity, accepting the body and mind to be the self, considers some people to be his kinsmen and others to be outsiders. Because of this misconception, he suffers. Indeed, the accumulation of such concocted material ideas is the cause of suffering and so-called happiness in the material world. The conditioned soul thus situated must take birth in different species and work in various types of consciousness, thus creating new bodies. Because adishtaya manasteyam visya upasevate, according to how we fix our mind, what we desire and what we abhor, what we are averse to in the material world, that will carry us into our next body. So thus, in this life, we build up desires, we build up hatred, and that carries us, at the time of death, into our next situation. Thus situated, he must take birth in different species and work in various types of consciousness, thus creating new bodies. This continued material life is called samsara. Birth, death, lamentation, foolishness, and anxiety are due to such material considerations. Thus we sometimes come to a proper understanding and sometimes fall again to a wrong conception of life. In this regard, an example is given from an old history. This involves a discourse between Yamaraj and the friends of a dead person. Please hear it attentively. So Sukadev Goswami, or actually Sutta, is speaking to Shonaka, relating this. And he's relating what Sukadev Goswami is saying to Prikit Maharaj. And Prikit Maharaj is hearing from Sukadev what Narada Muni is telling Yudhisthira. And what is Narada Muni telling Yudhisthira? He's telling about Haranyakashipu's speaking to his relatives. And what is he speaking to his relatives? He's speaking a story where Yamaraj is speaking to the friends of a dead person. So it's a story inside of a story inside of a story inside of a story. Please hear it attentively. So this is going to, from here till the end of the chapter, is this story inside of a story inside of a story inside of a story. Yamaraj, the Lord of Death, is speaking to the friends of a dead person. In the state known as Usinar, there was a celebrated king named Suyagya. When the king was killed in battle by his enemies, his kinsmen sat down around the dead body and began to lament the death of their friend. His gold and bejeweled armor smashed, his ornaments and garlands fallen from their places, his hair scattered and his eyes lusterless. The slain king lay on the battlefield, his entire body smeared with blood, his heart pierced by the arrows of the enemy. When he died, he had wanted to show his prowess And thus he had bitten his lips, and his teeth remained in that position. His beautiful lotus-like face was now black and covered with dust from the battlefield. His arms, with his sword and other weapons, were cut and broken. When the queens of the king of Ussinar saw their husband lying in that position, they began crying, "O Lord, now that you have been killed, we also have been killed." Repeating these words again and again, they fell down, pounding their breasts at the feet of the dead king. As the queens loudly cried, their tears glided down their breasts, becoming reddened by kumkum powder, and fell upon the lotus feet of their husband. Their hair became disarrayed, their ornaments fell, in a way that evoked sympathy from the hearts of others, the queens began lamenting their husband's death. "O Lord, you have now been removed by cruel providence to a state beyond our sight." This is everyone's situation. We think again that we are in control. Prakriti kriyamana ni gunai kamani sarvasha. Ahankara vimudatma, bewildered by false ego, by illusion. We think we're in control of our destiny. Our power will see us through. Our intelligence will see us through. Our finances will see us through. This will see us through. That will see us through. But actually, everything depends ultimately on the Lord and intermediarily by our karma. So they're saying, "You have been removed by cruel providence to a state beyond our sight. We cannot see you anymore. You had previously sustained the livelihood of the inhabitants of Ussinar, and thus they were happy, but your condition now is the cause of their unhappiness." So when our happiness depends on things that are completely beyond our control, that are completely in the hands of providence, karma, that are always shifting, we are placing ourselves in such a precarious position. "O king, O hero, you are a very grateful husband and the most sincere friend of all of us. How shall we exist without you? O hero, wherever you are going, please direct us there so that we may follow in your footsteps and engage again in your service. Let us go along with you." So they were speaking very in a heartfelt, loving manner. The time was appropriate for the body to be burned, because in the Vedic system the body must be burned before the sun goes down. And if someone dies at night when the sun is down, the first thing in the morning it is taken to be burned. The time was appropriate for the body to be burned, but the queens, not allowing it to be taken away, continued lamenting for the dead body, which they kept on their laps. In the meantime, the sun completed its movements for setting in the west. While the queens were lamenting for the dead body of the king, their loud cries were heard even from the abode of Yamaraj. Assuming the dead body of a boy, Yamaraj personally approached the relatives of the dead body and advised them as follows. Here's Prabhupada's purport. "Sometimes the living entity is forced to give up his body and enter another one according to the judgment of Yamaraj. It is difficult, however, for the conditioned soul to enter another body unless the present body is annihilated through cremation or some other means. The living being has attachment for the present body and does not want to enter another, and thus in the interim he remains a ghost. If a living being who has already left his body has been pious, Yamaraj, just to give him relief, will give him another body. Since the living being in the body of the king had some attachment to his body, he was hovering as a ghost, and therefore Yamaraj, as a special consideration, approach the lamenting relatives to instruct them personally. Yamaraj approached them as a child, because the child is not restricted, but is granted admittance anywhere, even to the palace of a king. Beside this, the child was speaking philosophy. People are very much interested in hearing philosophy when it is spoken by a child. So Yamaraj himself approached the lamenting relatives. They were holding on to the dead body of their husband as if they could keep him, but he had already gone. The soul had already left. So Yamaraj spoke. "How amazing it is, alas, how amazing it is. These persons," this is a young boy speaking, "who are older than me, have full experience that hundreds and thousands of living entities have taken birth and died. Hundreds and thousands and hundreds of hundreds of thousands and millions of living entities have taken birth and died. Thus they should understand that they also are apt to die, yet still they are bewildered. The conditioned soul comes from an unknown place and returns after death to that same unknown place. There is no exception to this rule, which is conducted by material nature. Knowing this, why do they uselessly lament? So if in the Bhagavad Gita, in the second chapter, Krishna also speaks in this way, saying that if you think that the soul, there is no soul, some people think that we're just the body. So if you think that there is no soul and the body dies, what is a body anyway? It's just earth and water and this chemical and that chemical and some carbon and some calcium and some hemoglobin. This chemical, that chemical, a bunch of chemicals. So why lament over a bunch of chemicals? That's if you think there is no soul. And if you think that there's a soul, and the soul has given life to the body, and that the soul is eternal, well, why lament? Because the soul is eternal. That which is, that was life in the body still exists. So he's taking one side, that the soul exists, death is unavoidable, where the soul came from, before it entered the body, no one knows. And it enters after death, it goes somewhere, no one knows where. And it can't, and it happens continuously. There's a story that about Lord Buddha, that while he was teaching, some woman came to him whose baby had died. What a horrible thing for a mother when her child dies, and she couldn't accept it. She just couldn't accept it. So she was carrying the body of the dead child with her, asking people, "Can you help me bring my child to life? Please help me." And she heard the Buddha was nearby, a great holy man, a wise person. So she went to the Buddha and said, "This is so heartbreaking for me. Can you bring my dead body to life? My child's body to life?" And Buddha said, "Yes." "How? What do I have to do?" "Whatever it is, I'll do it. You go to the nearby village, nearby town, and you beg from one house some sesame seeds. And I will take those sesame seeds that you've begged from a house, and I, using those, I'll bring the child back to life. But there's one condition. You have to attain these by begging from a house in which there is no one, no relative that has died, that no one is lamenting the death of a relative. So she was so thrilled that this holy person is going to bring my child back to life. So she knocked on the first door of the house and said, "I come to beg, please give me some sesame seeds. But is anyone in this house or any relative of yours has died at some time in the sometime?" Said the person said, "Sorry, you know, my grandfather has died." "Oh, sorry." And she went to the next door, begging sesame seeds, and in the next door, she was about to get them and ask them the same question. She said, "Sorry, my cousin, my sister's brother's uncle has died." And one by one, she went to every door, and she saw that every household is in one way or another is afflicted by a disaster in the form of death. And by knocking all these doors, on all these doors, she began to understand that what she was experiencing was actually common. And she had to accept it. Everyone else had to accept it. No one likes to accept it, but everyone has to accept it. So Yamaraj is preaching, there's no exception to this rule. Text 38. "It is wonderful," he said. So he's coming, and of course he's a young boy speaking in this way. "It is wonderful that these elderly women do not have a higher sense of life than we do." Because after all, we're just a young boy. "Indeed, we are most fortunate, for although we are children and have been left to struggle in material life unprotected by father and mother, and although we are very weak, we have not been vanquished or eaten by ferocious animals. Thus, we have a firm belief that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has given us protection, even the womb of the mother, will protect us everywhere." Because they were thinking, "Who will protect me? You are a protector. You are our pati. You are our protector. Who will protect me now?" So Yamaraj is saying, this is unavoidable that he's died. You're thinking, who's protected me? I'm an orphan. I have more knowledge, more experience, more faith than you. Even though I am just a boy and you're an adult. So who is fortunate? The wife of the king or a young boy who's an orphan? So the Supreme Lord is in control, he's telling them. And we have to surrender unto him, trusting him. The boy addressed the women. "Oh, weak women, only by the will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is never diminished, is the entire world created, maintained, and again annihilated. This is the verdict of the Vedic knowledge. This material creation, consisting of the moving and non-moving, is exactly like his plaything. Being the Supreme Lord, he is completely competent to destroy and protect." That's purport. "In this regard, the queens might argue, if our husband was protected by the Supreme Personality of Godhead when in the womb, why has he not been given protection now? To this question, the answer is, ya ichayesha shri jatidam avyayo ya eva rakshati avilampate chaya. One cannot argue with the activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Lord is always free, and therefore he can protect and can also annihilate. He is not our order carrier. Whatever he likes, he will do. Therefore, he is the Supreme Lord. The Lord does not create this material world at anyone's request, and therefore he can annihilate everything merely by his will. That is his supremacy. If one argues, why does he act in this way? The answer is that he can do so because he is supreme. No one can question his activities. If one argues, what is the purpose of this sinful creation and annihilation? The answer is that to prove his omnipotence, he can do anything and no one can question him. If he were answerable to us concerning why he does something and why he does not, his supremacy would be curtailed. Next verse. Yamaraj continues. Sometimes one loses his money on a public street where everyone can see it. And yet his money is protected by destiny and not seen by others. Thus the man who lost it gets it back. On the other hand, if the Lord does not give protection, even money maintained very securely at home is lost. So we're under his protection, and you could say it's whimsical, but regardless of it, of whether it is or not, this is a reality. Nothing happens other than by his will. If the Supreme Lord gives one protection, even though one has no protector and is in the jungle, one remains alive. Whereas a person well protected at home by relatives and others sometimes dies. No one is able to protect him. Prabhupada's purport. These are examples of the supremacy of the Lord. Our plan to protect or annihilate do not act. Plans to protect or annihilate do not act. But whatever he thinks of doing, he, meaning God, Krishna, actually happens. The examples given in this regard are practical. Everyone has had such practical experiences. And there are also many other clear examples. For instance, Prahlad Maharaj said that a child is certainly dependent on his father and mother, but in spite of their presence, the child is harassed in many ways. Sometimes, in spite of a supply of good medicine and an experienced physician, a patient does not survive. Therefore, since everything is dependent on the free will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, our only duty is to surrender unto him and seek his protection. Okay, we'll stop here. Thank you very much. Any questions or comments? Prabhupada explained that in a previous purport. They know that he's the Supreme, but they don't want to surrender to him. They don't want to follow his instructions. They don't want to serve him. Just like a person with a criminal mentality may know that the president or prime minister or the king is supreme, and that there are laws that he says that all citizens must follow, but he's determined by his nature to break the laws, and he acts in a criminal fashion. That's what Prabhupada described previously, that the demons know the Lord is supreme. These Vedic demons, they know that Vishnu is the supreme, but they still want to kill him. So there may be some subtlety, something a little more subtle in their understanding of him as supreme, that he's the most powerful, something like that. But still they want to kill him. I think, who has the right to tell me what to do? Control me. So basically they're thinking themselves as supreme. I'll do as I like, when I like. That's such illusion. Or somewhere, maybe it's in one of Dante's books, poems. Or is it maybe in Milton, I think it's Milton who quotes the devil saying, better to be free in hell than serve in heaven. Something like that. So here we are. One time, Prabhupada, this was in 1966, I think, where Prabhupada was with the devotees in the subway in New York. And the devotees said to Prabhupada, "This is just like hell, isn't it, Prabhupada?" And Prabhupada said, "No, in hell there is no electricity." But other than that, it's pretty hellish. Hell is awful. And as soon as the electricity goes out, then there's no difference. So hell is awful. But rather to be a free man in hell, suffering, than to be a servant of God. This is our position. Our lamentable position. Okay, we'll stop here. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. We won't say Haranyakashipu ki jai, even though he's... Just see, isn't it amazing? He's speaking so nicely. But his motive is vulture-like and jackal-like. That's what's on his mind. Thanks.